This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We've got the Pete Carroll press conference coming up any moment. As soon as the coach steps up to the podium, we will send you out to the VMAC, get the latest from him, see how he feels after watching game tape. And I would love to be in that room, and you've certainly been in those rooms. After a game like this, though, is it the head coach with the entire team, or do they break off into positions? So the O-line is in there with their coach, and the linebackers are in a different room with their coach. How does that work?
Usually? Yeah, we used to have how do we do it? First of all, we'd do special teams, you know, and then the coach would come in and he would talk about the game, and then you'd split up.
And then you'd watch film with your linebacker coach.
Yeah, typically. So sometimes with the entire defense, but mostly it would just go into, you'd go into your linebacker room. So
it's not Pete with the entire team going, guys, here's what went wrong. This is unacceptable.
Whatever. I think that sometimes they'll show, I think Chuck used to put together like a highlight of these are, five plays that were spectacular after a win. You know, look at the effort here. Look at the teamwork, this and that. And then on the other side, if it's a terrible play. And I just remember thinking, I hated whenever I was part of, a bad play. You just dreaded it. You dread the film session.
Because you're called out in front of everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And Chuck would do that.
What do you say? Wyman, what are you thinking here?
Yeah, no, he wouldn't question you. He would just say this is not acceptable and we can't have this kind of, performance. I remember Rusty Tillman telling me that his grandmother could cover kicks better than me. He said that in front of everyone. So, and he was right.
All right, we'll talk more about that. Here's the head coach right now.
Johnny Boyle, want to get us going?
Happy to. Yeah, Pete, yesterday you talked about the penalties and kind of that's on you and you need to be better. What's the process of finding that line between playing with the emotion you want, the fire you guys want, but not having to go too far?
Yeah, you have to be accustomed to, being in that kind of rage that we play in, and know how to manage it. And we've got to stay cognizant of the rules and and the planning of, how the referees call the things, And so sometimes the guys, they might lose the interpretation a little bit, but I thought the game was called well. I don't think that there was any calls, of the ones that I'm referring to that were in big question. So it was just a matter. Our guys have to just stay aware and make sure that they're mindful of the situations that they're in and make really good choices and decisions and protect us whenever they can.
Corbin?
Hey, Pete. Jamal and Bobby after the game indicated that run fits and gap integrity were a big issue for the defense in the second half. After watching the film, how did you see that? How much of an impact did that have on Derrick Henry going off in the second half, especially since it seemed like they were testing the edge more with their run game?
No, I didn't feel like it was. I thought with the way we played it, we more so than the fits of it. We didn't have to change from the first half to the second half. We were in the spots. Spacing changed a little bit. Derek changed it a little bit by coming downhill at us. But I think once we took a look at the film, it was just a matter of fitting it up consistently play after play after play and just hanging in there and just, outlasting it. And they did a really nice job. He did a really good job. And the game kind of went in their favor as it was close. They just kept running it. He ran the ball 35 times or something like that. It's a lot of carries for the guy. But everything's really clear on the film when we look at it. And playing a running game is always about spacing, and we needed to do a little bit better job there.
Bob Condota, Seattle Times.
Pete, do you have any update on DK Metcalf's health? And also, what did you think in general of his game yesterday?
I saw DK. He said he felt fine. That's all I know so far. We don't have him on the report at this point. I think he was trying really hard early and happened in both games where he's really trying to set the tempo and try to find his, the competitive makeup of the game and he needed to calm down a little bit. He was trying too hard, but he was just, really working hard. Really working hard. And sometimes it goes too far. He had the two holes on the perimeter screens, and those were important plays to us. He was you know, he was really mauling the guy he was blocking and just went too far.
Greg Bell, Tacoma News Tribune.
Yes, sir. Through two games, is this how you envision using Jamal Adams? Is that gone according to plan?
Yeah, this is some of it. There's more to do with him, but yeah, we're moving him around a lot. He has a lot of opportunities. I think he rushed about seven times yesterday or something like that. You know, so we like him. You know, working the passing game. You know, on the rush aspect of it when we can, and we can't do it a lot, but we can do it some.
Is he so unique and different from what you've had that you're still learning how to use him most effectively?
Yeah, I think he's learning too. He's learning how we're using him and how to take advantage of the opportunities that he's getting. And he's really an aggressive player, so he really goes for it. And so he has to figure out how to manage that to fit in with, you know, with his assignments and stuff. But he's there's more stuff to do with him. You know, we haven't called everything that we have. But he's going to continue to be an active part of it and continue to be moved around.
Tim?
Pete, following the long touchdown pass to Freddie in the fourth quarter, how would you assess the way Russell played those final few drives of regulation and then the drive in overtime?
Well, we didn't. There was a couple problems that we had. You know, when Russ had an early snap that messed the timing up on a route, and we, you know, there was a couple things that didn't allow us to function. We didn't function as well down the stretch, you know, and that's what I was really disappointed with. But the last sequence, you know, he was very aggressive with the shots we took, and as we look back, we would say, okay, let's dump the ball off, you know, because we didn't convert on him. But he had been successful being real aggressive in the game, and you know, he was trying to just keep going, keep pushing it. But so I wish he would have, you know, been able to keep us moving with a couple checkdowns late in the game, in the overtime in particular. But we were, you know, we were playing with confidence, we were going after it, and he tried to take advantage of it.
Michael Sean.
Pete, how'd you assess your corners, DJ and Trey?
Well, they managed through the game. I didn't like the big post route. You know, that was a safety help as well. But you know, for the most part, you know, we got beat on a double move one time with Trey. Didn't look good, but they're hanging in there. They're battling. We mixed a lot of different coverages and a lot of different stuff that they did. They were involved with run support quite a bit too in the game. We were, like the one on the big play we missed. But, you know, they're battling.
Art?
Pete, on the last Titans' last drive to the tying touchdown, Tannehill hit on seven passes, almost all out of the no huddle. I'm wondering what happened with the defense. What was so hard about getting a stop in there with
I'm not sure. It might have been five of those were checkdowns, you know, and we were zoning up and changing the ways we were zoning, and he just was real comfortable checking the ball down. So I wish we could have kept them to, you know, lesser gains, and wish we could have kept him from, you know, being able to be that consistent, because that was enough for them at the time. You know, they've got those guys out there, so we were really working their good guys and trying to make sure that we would stay on them. And the zones allowed for the checkdowns, and they made too much. They were consistent, and he did a nice job of taking what we were, you know, forcing them to take, and it was good enough in that drive to move the football. You know.
Brady.
What do you think of the start that Tyler's off to?
Yeah, it's pretty spectacular. Really, you know, he's been able to do all of the things that, you know, we would hope to see him do, finding ways to get behind the secondary and also just making real consistent catches too underneath. He's just been available for us really solidly, and so he's off to a great start. That's really good for us, you know, and whenever either one of the guys gets hot, it makes a difference for the other guy, and it'll help us out with getting the ball to DK and getting the ball to tight ends, which didn't happen in this game. But, he's doing everything we're asking of him right now. He's doing great.
Some of his catches aren't just your typical pitch and catch. I mean, these are difficult plays that he's making. Where do you think that comes from, that neck?
Oh, he's always had it, you know. He's just as natural a catcher as you can get. It showed up in his college film. You know, he was a fantastic player. He's always been. He's got remarkable hand-eye coordination and also just confidence to make those plays and be so comfortable. He makes them look so easy, you know, and so graceful. He's really talented, you know, and very confident.
Jackie.
Hey, Coach, you touched on it last night, but Bobby with the 20 tackles last night, setting a new franchise record for a single game. Just his performance over the last 2 weeks, what have you thought of it?
Yeah, he's off to a great start. Been extremely active. Yesterday's game was, you know, he had 40 runs to deal with, so he's going to be involved in that for sure. But he did a nice job in the passing game. He's just playing really good. He's really on his game. He's handling everything really well so far. He's doing great.
Curtis?
Yeah, Pete, you said it was really clear on tape. What stood out? What was clear? What struck you the most when you went back and watched it?
Well, the thing that bothered me the most about the game was how we you know, failed to make the good decisions at the time of the end of the play, and we gave him 75 yards and 5 penalties, you know. 5 major penalties, and that was really disruptive in the game. We had slugged it out throughout, and those changes in the field position it just disrupted the flow of the game for us, and you know, it made us adjust the momentum that we would build and big play, and then here we go, we stop them, and now they get the ball first down again, you know, on a third down, a couple plays, you know, it was really obvious that the rest of the game was just a slugfest, you know, for us on defense, and offensively, you know, what was obvious is that we never really found the rhythm because we scored so quickly in the first half when we needed the running game that needed to be developed during the course of the game, we didn't have it. And so we, you know, we just didn't finish the game the way I would love to have finished that thing, because we had a chance to hold it and work the football, and so all of those things that kind of seemed clear coming out were pretty obvious watching the film, and there was a game to be won there, you know, and that's why it was, you know, it's a real disappointment to let them get away with it.
Nota, Seattle Times.
Yeah, Pete, there's been a lot of chatter about the taunting penalty. Obviously, DJ got the one. I guess, do you have a view in general of that rule and what the NFL is trying to get done with that?
Yeah, I really respect what they're trying to get done, you know, and they would like the game, you know, to not have that in it. It's a hard transition. You saw what it took for us to get a penalty there. I think it's we've opened up a bit of a can of worms, you know, and so we're gonna have to find our way through it here as we go. I don't know how other teams are doing with it, but it hasn't worked well for us so far. But it's clear what the rule is, and so we just have to react the right way. It's the reaction of the player in the moment that we have to train, and so it, you know, you got a lot of guys that have to deal with, you know, those explosive moments, and they've got to really turn their focus away from the opponent, which is, it's a good thought. It's just, it's hard to manage it.
Well,
yeah, Pete, just wanted to get your thoughts on how Al Woods played, the 7 tackles and the sack when you're missing Brian Monet, so you maybe needed even more out of him.
Yeah, Al played a terrific football game. You know, there was a ton of plays he was involved with, not just making the tackle, but contributing to the blocking scheme and keeping linebackers free and all. He had a lot of responsibility in that yesterday, and he really held the line of scrimmage great, pushed the pocket well, had a great sack for us, and was a factor, you know, pushing the middle in some of the pass rushes that other guys had success on. So he just played a really good football game. He had to play a lot of plays yesterday. With Brian not there, I think he and Puna both played 60-something plays, you know, and that's a lot of plays for those guys to play, and we miss Brian.
Was there any concern or kind of curiosity about how Al would be coming back after taking the year off?
Yeah, I was concerned about it, you know, and when we talked a lot, and he said he had worked really hard to stay in really good shape, and, you know, you don't know until you see the guys, and he came in, he has been just rock solid throughout all of the work that we've done. We've given him some breaks on certain days, but all in all, he's been able to do everything, and he's really performing well. And it's kind of like he, you know, he bought a year, you know, and taking that year off. So the work ethic that he put forth didn't make that put him at a disadvantage. He came back really, really good.
Thanks, Pete.
Greg?
Sir, where's Sidney Jones on his acclimation to the defense process?
It's all practice stuff and a little bit of special team stuff so far. It's a little bit of a challenge for us to get him and really blessed too, to get those guys enough really good reps to see them on our field with us, so I'm accumulating, like I think I said this last week, I'm accumulating reps of opportunities and stuff as they work. And we're, both those guys look good. They look like they can help us. We just have to kind of make the call when it's time to give them a chance to play. And, it's not a position that we've rotated guys regularly over the years, so we have to wait and see how that fits.
And then for clarification for fans on the new taunting rule, so by letter of the law, if Reed turns his back to the receiver there and just yells in space to the crowd, it's okay?
Yep. Yep. It's directing the aggressive movement or whatever or gesture at another player. And so, what we're talking about is always celebrating with your teammates, and we've been practicing it and making a big deal about it because it is one of the main new things that they've emphasized. And as always, that's what they call. I don't think it's bad for the game. I just think it's hard for the guys to do in the moment, they just got to learn and train and we got to do a better job. That's why I have to do a better job of putting us in situations and making sure we're monitoring it really carefully and helping our guys train.
AJ?
Coach, you mentioned how hard it was to sort of get the offense in a rhythm in this game and that the run game hadn't really developed through the first half. So in the second half, when you needed it, it was hard to rely on it. At the same time, I imagine it's hard to be upset when Tyler Lockett and Russell Wilson connect for that 51. So how do you, as you and Shane sort of work through the play calling and the strategy for the game, how do you balance those two things, knowing the moon ball is good for the game, it's possible, but maybe the established run game?
No, it's a really good question because, are you frustrated that you're having success, in whatever way it is? No. But there's a price to pay somewhat when you haven't run the ball with any real consistency and had to rely on it to develop and to count on it, know the plays that you need to go to and the schemes that are really hitting it and all of that. So also you get drawn to it that maybe that's why Russ was so aggressive with the ball late. We had hit some really big plays and they had some good opportunities and the guys are coming through and making the plays for him, so he's giving them a chance. The ball he threw to Tyler, the first one in overtime, was a phenomenal throw. We're just a hair out of bounds, but it was a phenomenal throw and Tyler was up there to catch the ball. If he'd been in bounds, I bet he caught that ball, so it's a little bit of a trap in that regard, but certainly we wouldn't change the success that we were having. And so we didn't have the ball that much because we scored so quickly. The 5-yard sequence there, the 2-minute sequence is totally different than everything else. And then, three other big shots, and so just the way it went. And we weren't complaining about it. We just the way the game turned out. I wish we would have got into the rhythm in the third quarter, in hopes of, being ready for to finish it well.
So is that something you and Shane address when you go over the film of how to
make
sure?
We talked about it, sure. We talked all about it, yeah, of course.
Jen?
The tight ends didn't seem to be as involved yesterday as they were in week one. Is that a function of the opponent or just the way the offense was functioning?
It just went that way. Jen, we talked about that too, during the game. And it just, we had some calls and some opportunities and the ball just didn't go there. And it just kind of turned out that way. And that was not by design in the plan. We just didn't get to them. There just wasn't that many plays that allowed us to have the time to really develop it. So, but that's not a big worry. If we're having success, we don't care who's getting the ball. It's not that, has nothing to do with that.
Nico.
Thank you. With basically the way this one went, as you said, it was going your way for so long, you just weren't able to finish. In your talks with the guys, is it one of those things where they just wish they could get out there tomorrow and fix those things and continue what we saw for the first three quarters or so?
Yeah, what was really important, I thought, to address was the decision-making. More than anything else was the decision-making in the moment, and knowing when we're on the sidelines and knowing when you're late on the quarterback, you know, where you have to make the right choice of how to make your contact. And sometimes it's just so split second that they can falter. And that's both of the ones that we had were just bang, bang, you know, hits. And we have to get our head out of the hit, you know, and we didn't get it done either time. That's not a new emphasis for us. But we just have to emphasize the conscience that it takes, that has to override the moment. And the conscience of, you know, you're performing for your team and these are the rules and here's how they call it, and the discipline that it takes to get out of those situations, you know, carefully. Last week, we had a couple of plays on the quarterback at the Colts. We had big hits on the QB, and our guys just did it right, you know. And Monet had a big one. Somebody else had a real big hit on him, and I think it might have been Daryl Taylor. You know, the guys made the proper choices with those moments, that's what we're addressing, and we have to have that conscience that allows us to make the good choice. Same thing as the hit out of bounds, you know, same idea. You know, you got to really, there's a big white stripe there, and you got to, okay, here I am, I'm approaching it, and I got to make a good choice right here. And that's where, you know, the real heightened aggressiveness, you know, it's challenging for the guys to make the good choices at the right time. And it's early in the year, and we'll get better, and we'll learn. And the really cool thing is that, of course, we can fix that. Of course we can fix all those, every one of those. That's 5 15-yard penalties that all can be fixed. And I wouldn't be surprised if we don't turn it right now and we have a couple great weeks and get going and we won't have any problem there. I can't imagine that continuing to happen. Special teams did a great job. And those guys played with great aggression, great fire in them. No penalties for the day. You know, that's a big deal with all those cover opportunities that they had. And so we use them as an example today.
Couple more. Brady?
Yeah, Pete, going back to the taunting, you called it a can of worms. Is part of that, is there a risk of an official seeing what's actually a harmless interaction and maybe not hearing it and thinking that it's taunting?
It's a judgment call. It's a total judgment call, you know. If it's directed at the opponent, then I think if they're going to err, they're going to err on calling the penalty, and we have to understand that. You just have to adapt, you know. There's another play on the film where a guy, you know, made a very aggressive movement, but he was turned a little bit. So it didn't look like it went at anybody. So it was okay, you know. And so they made a good choice. I don't think it was, I don't think it was a bad decision. I just think it's, you know, there's a lot of fire in this game, and there's a lot of juice that happens, and there's moments, you know, that just draw the most, you know, guttural reaction. And sometimes, you know, we just have to be there and figure it out how to and how to celebrate. And we'll get that done.
All right, there you go. There's Pete Carroll with the media. We'll talk more about that. Also talk about one Seahawk who is in the midst of an all-time special season. That's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
So there was Pete Carroll speaking with the media moments ago. Hopefully you had a chance to catch that. We got the professor, John Clayton, coming up at the top of the hour. So tune in for that. See what John's take is on all this and everything else that went on in the NFL. Anything strike, before we move on, anything that Pete said strike you? He kind of doubled down on what he said about Russ to Mike Salk. He said it here, like, hey, I wish Russ could have checked down there and, you know, helped us out a little bit, essentially, is what he was saying in the overtime possession.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily checked down, but, like, just shallow routes, yeah. You know, kind of easier throws. It was surprising. It was so shocking to me, just because you had those kinds of things. And by the way, how about Travis Homer? He's a guy that we were close and intimate with during the entire camp that we were out there broadcasting from the VMAC, because he was always in the weight room.
Yeah.
And like
he lifted all the weights.
He did. Looks like an action figure, but he's done well on special teams. And then, you know, he had that series against before the end of the half where he ended up catching a pass and, you know, just getting 10 yards out of bounds, same thing. Then they go to lock it, you know, so they weren't really necessarily check downs, but I mean they were easier throws, they were shallow throws, and they were available, and Russ just didn't go there. So yeah, I wonder about this. I heard this from somebody, can't remember where, but it was from Matthew Stafford, that he was saying that his criticism of Russ is that he's not going through his progressions, that like he's not, you know, checking 1, 2, 3. I mean, you've seen him do that, and
right.
I think he's gotten away from that a little bit. And, you know, look, that's, you know, I'm not a quarterback coach, but I have kind of noticed that he's looking to go one way. And, you know, but last week, look, he looked off the safety for the one that he hit to, I think it was for DK Metcalf.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he's still directing guys with his head and stuff like that. But I feel like at certain points he gets fixated on, like, he knows where he's going to go and he's looking there the entire time.
Hey, one more before we move on to what we were going to talk about here. And it was a text, and it's a text about a play I asked you about that I saw somebody else criticize. And it's from the 253, and you guys can text in whenever you want, 710-710 to the Mac and Jack's text line. It says, it's hilarious that Adams talked about gap integrity. He left his gap and left Flowers out to dry on Henry's long run. Flowers did his job, turned the play inside, but Adams wasn't there. Norton should take away his freedom to blitz or stunt whenever he wants. What did you think of that play? Because I brought that up to you, and we don't know what was called. Is he doing this on his own? Does he have that freedom just to blitz whenever he wants, or is that being called from the sideline? And on that particular play, was he in the right spot as far as you could see?
No, I couldn't really tell. I mean, it's hard to know where he's playing and what his gaps are, because I think they give him a lot of freedom. So, you know, that from that standpoint, I'm not sure. It looks like, you know, sometimes he's coming off the edge. Sometimes he's hitting that tight end gap. So, yeah, it's difficult to figure out exactly. And I wouldn't, you know, try to figure out, you know, what his gap was or what his responsibility was. I'm trying to find the play, but, you know, as far as I know, it's always difficult to try to figure out what he's doing.
But do you think it's coming from the sideline? Like, hey, here's what we want you to do on this play, or they're just like, Jamal, do what you think is best?
I think it's coming from the sidelines. I don't think – I mean, look, you could be the best player in the world, and I played with some really good defenders. I mean, guys like Steve Atwater, and you never get the chance to just do whatever you want. The only time I ever heard of that was Fred Young. Fred Young back in the 80s, that every once in a while he would be like, hey, I'm going to go rush the passer. And Keith Butler would be like, okay, I'll cover for you. I'll cover your zone for you. But, I mean, he was allowed to do that. Cortez Kennedy, you know, like I told you the story where he would change the call or shake me off. Like, no, we're going this way. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Wherever you want to go. So I don't think he has that kind of – because, look, you could be the best player in the world, but, you know, it's still – you're facing – you're in a situation where everybody has a gap. And if that breaks down – in high school and college, maybe they don't find it, but in the pros, they always do.
Yeah.
They always find it.
All right, let's talk about a player who has been shining in the first two games, and that is Tyler Lockett. I was telling you during the break, we were talking about him. He is just remarkable in that he doesn't look like he's the fastest guy on the field. He's not the quickest off the line, but by the time Russ sees him and throws him the ball, for whatever reason, I don't know what happens at the end of his routes, he's got 3 to 6 to 7 yards of separation between him and whichever defensive back is in a position to defend him. I don't understand. He doesn't understand. We asked him what happens. He's like, I don't know. I'm just running routes.
Yeah.
But here's a little highlight of him from yesterday.
Wide slot, far side. Russ play fake. Being chased. Now he looks. Now he throws back. It's Tyler Lockett. Waits, makes the catch. Breaks the tackle. 30, 25. They're not going to touch him. 10, 5. Touchdown. Tyler Lockett. Touchdown, Seahawks. A 63-yarder that Tyler Lockett stopped, started, broke a tackle, and then broke the tape at the finish line like he was winning the 100 in the Olympics. The building is rocking, and the Seahawks go on top 9-6.
I mean, just he's remarkable in two games so far. I know it's only two games, still 15 left to play. He's been targeted 16 times. He's got 12 catches for 278 yards and 3 touchdowns so far in two games. I mean, he is just he's fun to watch. It's just fun to watch a guy who honestly can't explain to you why he has that kind of success, but how it's more often than not. It doesn't mean he never makes a contested catch. Certainly he does. We've seen him do that too. But it's amazing how often he succeeds or comes up with a huge catch in a crucial moment. And you see him, what feels like standing alone, you know, and that's an exaggeration. But he's got so much separation between him and whoever was supposed to be covering him. And it's remarkable how consistently that happens with him.
I wonder how much of it is that he is very deceptive. Like, we were talking about it. Here's what I would equate him to as far as his running style. He reminds me of Mitch Haniger. If you ever watch Mitch Haniger run, everything's behind him. He doesn't do the high knees thing.
Right.
You know, it's like, I don't know, it's almost like he's on a treadmill, just the way he runs.
His feet aren't coming off the ground.
Yeah, they're just not, the knees aren't coming up, like his hip flex. And that's kind of like Tyler. I mean, he just finds a way. It's just deceptive. It doesn't look like he can run that fast. But like you said, all of a sudden, he's got kind of a weird running motion, but he still swears that he can beat anybody on this team in a 100-meter dash. And, you know, even with DK Metcalf, and it's something about the competition. I mean, he's one of those guys that has field speed. You know,
yeah.
But you're right. It's like all of a sudden you get – now, the Fred Swain thing was totally different. That was a total bust,
yeah,
obviously.
He's camping out having a sandwich back there going, he'll see me in a minute.
Yeah, but, I mean, Tyler, and then his ability to stop and then take off the other way. And then, you know, at the end, I couldn't see if that was a corner. Maybe it was Jack Rabbit that was running up, like was going to catch. That guy was hauling. And all of a sudden, Tyler just starts to pull away from him. Yeah. And, you know, and the other guy looked like he was going to catch him. So anyway, yeah, that's I think he kind of sneaks up on people.
He's just remarkable. I think he's wildly underappreciated nationally. I mean, out here, we, the fans, everybody knows what he brings. I just think nationally he is just really, really underappreciated because he's consistent. He is one of the elite receivers in this league. He doesn't have the build. He's not 6'4", 225, loaded with muscles like DK and entering, you know, Olympic trials or anything. He's very understated. But, man, is he effective, and he just is consistently beating whoever is covering him. Or, as they like to say, and I heard it probably five different times from former players and current players this weekend, Dave, whoever is guarding him.
No!
You're not going to win that one. It is just – you got current players saying it, Dave.
Who?
I don't know.
Tyler says it all the time. Tyler Lockett.
Does he say guarding?
Oh, yeah.
I was watching one of the, you know, one of the wrap-up shows, you know, kind of going through every game on NFL Network or ESPN, and – sound bites interspersed throughout the highlights, and I heard guarding at least five times. At least five times. So I just don't think we're going to win that fight.
It's misinformation, Bob.
All right, coming up. The questions around Jared Kelnick just disappeared, or did they? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We got the professor, John Clayton, joining us at the top of the hour. We'll talk some more football with him, but a little Mariner baseball. It's time for the Mariners' breakthrough moment of the game, powered by Fox Plumbing and Heating. And in case people weren't aware, they won the series in Kansas City, and one young Jared Kelnick had a heck of a series.
Swing, and he mashes this out to right center field. This is on the track. Taylor watching, and it's gone. Kelnick going deep in KC again. It's his third round tripper of the series, and his third run batted in today.
How about that? Jared Kelnick with the moment of the game, breakthrough moment of the game, powered by Fox Plumbing and Heating, and yesterday he went 3-for-4, drove in three runs.
How about a September, man? Yeah. You look at it, Lefko's got the stats here, 60 at-bats, 17 hits, 12 runs, 4 doubles, 6 home runs, .283 batting average. I say he's up to 178 now.
Yeah, 178, 179.
Was he below?
When he got sent down the first time, he was under 100.
Yeah.
I think he was hitting .098. So,
right.
Yeah, you're right. He's hitting .283 for the month of September with a .348 on base, more importantly, which tells you he's not striking out nearly as much. He's making contact. He's, you know, a decidedly better version of him. And in fact, I believe it's the only month he's hit over .200.
Yeah.
Of the whole season. I mean, he hit .118 in the month of May. He hit .00 in the month of June. He only played 5 games, but he didn't have a hit. He hit .154 in the month of July, hit .196 in August, and then this month he's hitting .283.
Is he the centerpiece of the rebuild? Like when you think of
him or Julio?
Yeah. What about
in terms of
what about the pitchers?
Yeah,
Logan Gilbert. You know, yeah, Kirby,
Hancock, those are all guys. I think in terms of just, and I'm basing this on what I've heard the national guys that really follow minor leaguers, Because I don't know if Julio's going to be good. I don't, you know, I couldn't have told you, oh, he's going to be great. I've watched this guy play. I haven't. You know, same with Hancock, same with Kirby. I'm relying on those that follow everything in the minor leagues and really break down their games and what they do and don't do well. And I would say, just to answer your initial question, that Julio and Kelnick are probably the ones that have the most hype in terms of expectation and you know, promise, if you will. They're all right there. I mean, it's going to be the pitchers. You definitely need Hancock. You need Kirby and those guys to pan out. And Gilbert looks threw a gem yesterday, by the way.
Yeah.
Also lost in the Seahawks mania. But, yeah, I would say Julio is the one that they expect the biggest things from, just based on the conversation centered around their organization.
Yeah. Well, and you know who else should be part of that is Kyle Lewis. And yeah, just not hearing anything from him that's good, the knee surgery and all that. What a shame. You know, and we've gotten away from that discussion because, look, things have gone really well. You know, we're still, you know, looking at this team, watching him in September. And, you know, they won the series, as you said, but, you know, we're not talking about those injuries that in the beginning of the season. I mean, that really could have derailed the entire thing if it got any worse. I mean, especially if a guy like Kelnick gets injured or Gilbert, you know, then especially you'd be like, well, this is one of those things. You have all the pieces built or ready to go and you have a team built and then everybody gets hurt and you just never get a chance to get going. But yeah, we've kind of moved away from that talk because at one point they, and I'm not sure if they still do, they probably do still have the most players that they've brought up. Is it around 60 now?
Yeah, I lost track. I think I honestly stopped counting around 54.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how many have shown up since.
But that was the main storyline there through the middle of summer, and then they got hot and it didn't become an issue anymore, but it still is. I mean, you still are, especially Kyle Lewis. So, yeah. And then, you know, Evan White's still a question mark, and he was, you know, injured a little bit. So, yeah.
He's done for the season with that quad injury. Justin Dunn is done for the season. And that was one when that first happened. The way he talked about it, the way everybody talked about it, was like, be fine. It's not a big deal. A little rest. We haven't seen him since. So he's finished for the year. We'll see what happens with him. Sheffield has made his way back, but he's in the bullpen. He's not part of your rotation as he was at the beginning of the year. You lost Paxton after 24 pitches. So, yeah, the attrition on this team has been remarkable in the fact that they are, you know, they're one win away from being a 500 team. They've got 80 wins. They're going to be a winning team.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be a winning team when everything told you, even at full strength, health wise, probably not going to be a winning team because there's just so much inexperience and youth here. You know, it's a building year. We keep going back to what management, not what the analyst, not what the talking head said. It's what management said. It's a year about building. It's a year about development. It's not so much about the wins and losses. Well, this is a year that nobody really anticipated, and they're still in it. Listen, you're two games in back of the Oakland A's. You've got seven games left with them, and that series is coming up here. So you've got a handful of games, a bunch of them against the A's. You're two games back of them. The Yankees are a game and a half out. So you got the A's and the Yankees ahead of you in that race, with Boston and Toronto occupying those two wild card spots. So is it likely? No, it's not. If you ask me to bet in Vegas, are they going to the playoffs? I would say no. But is it possible? Without question. Without question.
What's been the nicest surprise? I have my answer. My surprise of what has gone on this season is Ty France's defense.
Yeah, that's a great point.
At first base. And you know, when there's talk about moving him to third, I think that's a bad idea.
I think it's a fine idea if Evan White can hit. Because even though Ty France is dramatically improved and he is not even close to a liability at first, he's still defensively not the same as Evan White.
But they talk about the difference between playing, you know, that side of the field versus, you know, first and second. And, you know, it's just a totally different.
Yeah.
You know, as we know, playing first base is incredibly hard.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's not that hard. It's incredibly hard.
It's
a money ball line. But, yeah. He's done an awesome job.
If for whatever reason Evan White doesn't pan out, you feel like we're fine.
Right.
But you want – Evan White defensively is special. Offensively, a ton of work to do. See if he can get there. But you love that luxury if he can start hitting, if he can be a representative hitter at first base, the luxury of having Ty France, who's played third base before. You've got Toro, who's played third base. Maybe one of them, maybe Toro sticks at second. He finally starts to get more natural. But you've got options, which is great to have.
Yeah. Well, and Blowers would tell you that sometimes your defense helps your offense and vice versa.
Yep.
So hopefully that just never happened with Evan White, though. It certainly happened with Ty France because he could always hit.
All right, coming up, we'll talk some more football. The professor, John Clayton, is going to join us. You guys have questions for John, text him in right now to 710-710, the Mac and Jack's text line. We'll throw some of those his way as he joins us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.